Hello, everybody. I'm Chris.
I'm Craig.
I'm Jack.
And we are watching...
Craig, it's time to keep your appointment with the Wicker,
Wicker Man.
Your favourite film of all time.
I think he pronounces it the Wicker Man.
The Wicker Man.
Yeah.
The classic.
British Lion.
Yeah.
Peter and Snell Wind production.
First point of order.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's the
director's
version.
Cut. But we this is the director's cut DVD, which contains the theatrical version, which is the version that we're watching.
Mm-hmm.
It does also contain the director's cut, a feature length commentary.
From whom?
TV and radio spots. No fucking subtitles. Though.
Yeah, sure. No.
What is that about?
Con
for the hard of hearing people who might want to enjoy a film.
Convicts are bonny.
Oh, forget that happiness.
There we go.
Yeah, the must be a horror film, Craig. Ingrid Pitt's in it.
Absolutely, yeah.
So
here we are, the famous Wicker Man, the much admired and loved Wicker Man.
Craig, can I take you back some
months ago
when we were recording the commentary for the third and fourth episodes of The Box of Delights? Can you remember what you said about the Wicker Man?
I think I said that, well, I'm going to tell you what I think of the Wicker Man and hope that it marries to what I said then. Which is, it has an amazing
ending.
You said
it was your favourite film of all time, and it's a horror classic.
I said that it has an amazing ending, but I'm not sure the rest of the film deserves the ending.
Wow.
There are many things I like about the film, but I think there's a problem watching it when you're Scottish, in that it's full of lots of people like Walter Carr, etc, etc.
Yeah, you used to see
which
in the
undercuts the horror of it.
Okay.
It is an interesting film, but it's not the horror genius that people say it is.
Okay. I'd like to add
so that's
that
all sorted then, so we'll just finish that.
We're good.
I'll augment that by saying,
let's enjoy the
popcorn. I think it's an amazing film.
Mm-hmm.
But I would never contend it's a horror film.
Mm. Yeah, I'd go with that.
Why not?
Well, because nothing particularly horrible or shocking happens in it.
Until the last 5 minutes.
It gets quite creepy. You know, there's stuff with the sort of this, when they're, well, we'll get to, you know, with a...
Mm-hmm.
All the costume people running mm-hmm. through the village and all that. Just a wee bit sort of tales of that.
So what is the minimum requirement of a horror film then?
Horror.
Yeah, it has to be a bit horrible at some point.
Yeah, well, you need to elaborate on that. Come on. Come on, Craig.
Well, it's not scary.
Yeah.
It's not particularly disturbing.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it is disturbing.
No, I don't find it disturbing. That looks like the beginning
See, there are bits of it I find a wee bit disturbing. The bits with the going through the village and what the fuck and all that. In a sort of Tales of the Unexpected kind of way.
Yeah, it's more like a
Or like an episode
thriller.
Of Thriller or something.
Yeah.
But you see, that's what it is in my view.
Mm-hmm.
Which is more like a sort of a suspenseful thriller, like what the fuck is going on there.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of that whole, the normality of a copper arriving and it's just a missing persons kind of case.
Yeah.
Everything seems, you know, there's the school and there's the town and everything seems quite normal, and then the sort of paganist thing seems creepy because it's so in the open and everybody does it.
We do love a bit of paganism.
Yeah.
And I like all that.
Mm-hmm.
The trouble is it's also at the same time a musical. And that's a problem for me.
Why is that a problem?
Because it's just daft.
Next you're going to say you don't like the Rocky Horror.
You know how I feel about that. Although, funnily enough... Of late, I was talking to my son about the Rocky Horror and the Time Warp came on something and I found myself not being as vociferous about it as I have in the past because I actually found myself thinking now that I've got a bit older and got, you know, less up yourself. I just thought, well, there's no harm in it.
Mm.
And that's actually a truth about it.
But, you know, there's an interesting comparison to make in some ways because the Rocky Horror Picture Show is sort of remembered for the Time Warp.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the and it is a musical.
Mm.
But in terms of the songs in it, the Time Warp's pretty much the least interesting song in it.
Yeah.
Because
mm-hmm.
other songs, even like the opening song, like Superheroes, Superheroes is at the
science
end.
Fiction,
sorry. Science
picture.
Fiction at the start.
Oh yeah,
is a great song.
Mm.
And there's a lot of songs all the way through it that are really great songs.
Yeah.
There are problems with the Rocky Horror Show, like the whole fucking meatloaf bit. It just bothers me. It just annoys me. It's just a diversion.
Yeah.
And it actually, in terms of the structure of the story, you're like, oh, it takes you a while to realise, all right, so that's a previous experiment. And you don't really know what the point of it is.
No.
But I like Rocky Horror a lot. I think that's...
Tim Curry's fantastic.
Yeah.
They are both cult films.
Yes.
They are both cults. There's no question of that. Well, let's talk about Edward Woodward. I mean,
so why
I don't think
there,
any. Well,
why is there so many D's in Edward Woodward?
Oh,
Ewa Woomer.
I think none of us will demur from the idea that he is one of the great men.
He was such,
loved Edward Woodward.
He was such an incredibly good actor in Edward Woodward.
Yeah, he's exceptional.
He's great in this.
Nothing that he's in that he's not brilliant in.
But he handles paper like a policeman would handle.
Yeah, he's very good paper acting.
He's a very unpretentious man. Always very sort of, you know, down to earth about his. He's very close friends with Les Dawson.
Yeah. He was friends with Les Dawson.
He was. I remember Les Dawson was on This Is Your Life.
Oh, that's right.
He told, was it Les Dawson? He was talking about Les Dawson on something. Because he was talking about going to Les Dawson's funeral.
Mm.
And he said, I remember him telling a story, and he said, I think it must have been a tribute programme.
Uh-huh.
And the way he put it was, I have a certain corpulence, so I undid the buttons on my trousers when I was driving. He said, and they stopped at an automated service station, I forgot, and I stood up out the car, my trousers dropped to my ankles in front of everybody, and I thought, Les, you bastards.
And so how did he get
married to Michelle Dutrice?
Yes,
yeah,
that's right, yeah.
Many a long year. Yeah. Betty.
Yeah. Yep, did that fantastic, that series, would you call it?
Callan?
Callan?
No, the sort of Strange but Truth type.
Oh, God, yeah, what was that series called again? Yeah.
We've talked about that in a previous commentary.
And there's Callan, there's The Equalizer.
Callan's great. And we have this thing, the thing that Robert McCall is actually Callan.
Yeah.
Who's left the service.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And has moved and has just set himself up because the shit that Robert McCall pulls.
Yeah, and there's
exactly
always references to his past in security services. Well, so I've always thought he's basically Callan.
When The Equalizer went wrong, was when it stopped being have you got a problem? Do you need some? You know.
Yeah.
And his old control turned up and it became a spy thing. And then you're like, well, that's not really the point. No. The point of it was meant to be that, you know, these pucks would or big shots would be causing problems for these people. You've got a fucking problem now because here's Robert McCall.
Yeah, I'm going to come and kill everyone.
Did he do a lot of films? Because I always think of
he did a lot of films. He did a lot of films.
So this
one
is
of his great
Callan,
performances. Uh-huh. This is just. I mean, are you still doing Callan on and off by then?
What was
this? 1973.
Yeah.
Is that right?
His great performance on film is possibly Breaker Morant, the Australian film about the mutiny and this about the killing of prisoners during the Boer War. Mm-hmm. And he's the
Brian
officer.
Brown.
Yeah, it's a super.
He's
film.
An atheist.
That's right.
He's not an officer. He's a.
He's the officer in it.
Is he? Is he? Or he's a lieutenant. They're sort of, but the point is, they're sort of lower ranks who are sacrificed.
Yeah, absolutely.
The hypocrisy of it. But it's the it's the way they die. He dies at the end, you know, straight back, totally unrepentant. He's an atheist in it, and does he not sing "God Save the King" when he's shot? It's incredible for him. But I mean, even in shit like. That Richard Gere film of King David, remember? Iwo Wewa plays his dad, and he's brilliant.
Yeah.
He's the only good thing in it.
Mm-hmm. And had a lovely light performance in Hot Fuzz.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Which I suspect came down to them just loving him from all this sort of stuff and paying a bit of respect to a great actor. He just died a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So
and he was in telly. One of my favourite series, which isn't largely forgotten now, which was Common as Muck.
Yeah.
Oh,
which is a fantastic series.
Yes. So the trope of the stranger turning up, in the sort of British version of that, does that...
It's kind of a Western thing.
Yeah, but this version, which you then sort of see again in things like American Werewolf in London, and it's the sort of thing that you would see on sketch shows, if they were kind of trying to do...
Yeah,
weird sort of yokel town things.
Mm.
Does that come from this film?
I've always thought
stuff that predates it.
The film this most resembles in terms of its structure is Bad Day at Black Rock.
Mm.
You know the John Sturges film. It's Spencer Tracy when he turns up in the town that killed a black guy.
Uh-huh.
So the town's got a secret,
mm-hmm.
and he turns up and he can batter people to fuck, and he's really tough.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And eventually, the town's secret. He's got one arm.
Yeah.
That's right. The town's secret comes out, and he's a sort of vengeful angel sort of thing. The difference is, in that film, he kind of takes revenge on them. In this film,
which is
where it is dark, he's a stooge from the start.
But the avenging angel thing, I think, I'm sure is like an old, ancient
show. Sure, yeah.
But I think it largely comes from an Inspector Calls.
Oh, okay.
That as well, yeah, absolutely, very similar.
Interesting, I hadn't thought of that.
We are
real people.
Yeah, all filmed down in Whithorn, Isle of Whithorn.
They're probably all 16.
Yeah. Yeah.
Including the 14. Wee guy with the woolly hat on there.
Yeah, real people.
There's Walter Carr.
Down the back there. And this creepy bastard.
Well, he's a bit jaunty, isn't he?
Yeah. Can't remember the actor's name. He was.
No,
I can't. Was he not a ballet dancer or something? What names have you got there?
It's none of those names. Let's have a look inside the DVD box.
Oh, was he not involved? I think he was involved with the setting up of the RSA&D and all that sort of thing.
All right.
Now called the Conservatoire. There
the
she is.
There she is.
Oh, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ms. Britt Eklund.
Mm. That's impact.
And what
he's
do
like, we... hello.
So what do we know about the making of this film?
Everyone knows about the making of this film.
Come on then, just give us the brief version.
The Landlord's Daughter. Uh-huh. Mm. Everyone knows about the making of this film because everyone's been told about it, and that's why it's a cult.
But wasn't there some controversy over the original storyline?
Was
wasn't there? I think there was accusations that they'd ripped. I think there was a piece of prose that's quite similar to this, and there's an accusation that
could be right. Mm. Yeah, did someone not try and sue them and say it was based on
his
story
that's right,
or something?
Yeah,
I think so.
But I think the thing that makes it creepy, and what makes the ending especially creepy, mm-hmm. is that all these people in the pub who you recognise just as the sort of people that cut about pubs, are suddenly all dedicated paganists who are willing to sacrifice somebody. That's what makes the ending creepy. But I do have sympathy with the point of view that lot of this stuff isn't particularly creepy.
Yeah.
I also have a problem with when we get to it, although others may not have a problem, of the fucking naked on the wall thrashing about singing.
Yeah. With the double,
because it's not hot.
Dobby's double, yeah.
But not the not that particularly. It's the weird overdubbing of the music that's I find in a couple of places a bit.
Is that a diegetic or it's not?
Yeah.
Did you say this was shite, this bit? Did you just say
Because it's just
shite.
It just becomes this kind of rather clumsy sort of musical bit. And
but it's setting the scene, isn't it?
I still like it.
The fact that they're
I don't like
look at that Smirnoff
vodka. They're very loose.
They're very loose.
He's an unloosh.
But yeah, there's wee hints there of the sort of paganist things.
Yeah. And the virility.
Dominoes, well known from paganists.
A lot of you shut the fuck up.
Oh, now you mentioned a film a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings us to something we need to talk about.
What's that?
You mentioned an American Werewolf in London.
Did you mention
American Werewolf in London? Are you aware it's about
by his son, is that right?
The utterly
the odious Max Landis.
Max Landis.
What pray tell?
I actually, again, sort of keep bringing up my son, but I mentioned it to him yesterday when he came home from school. I said, have you heard this? And I said, guess who's making it? And he actually stopped and looked at me and said, not Max Landis.
Which is exactly what I said when you told me.
Exactly. 12 years old and he's got his moral compass there.
Because when you said, he texted me and said, I'm making America, guess who's directing it? Actually, my first thought, which I thought was bad enough, was Zack Snyder.
but then it
was immediately superseded by the, sort of Trump victory equivalent thought of Max fucking Landis.
I can't think of any other way to say this without sounding like a complete wank. But I feel like you have to have a bit of a soul to be able to make American Werewolf.
Yeah.
I think that's a perfectly reasonable thing to say.
No. Oh, these tatties there.
Mm-hmm. What is this shit?
How did Britt Eklund end up in this film then?
Well, I think in the time actually. Now, when was this made?
73.
She wasn't married to one of the producers or something, was she?
Well, actually, what I was going to say was when she got divorced from Sellers, she was in a really bad way. You know, it was pretty traumatic being married to the maniac Peter Sellers.
In his worst period.
In his very worst period. Because he was going off the deep, like madly off the deep end at that point. And he married Britt Eklund and basically just dumped her. And she had kids and whatever. They had kids. And she had nothing. All gone in America. She came back to Britain and she had nothing. And as she explained once on a Des O'Connor Tonight, she thanked the British public. because she did Panto.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was, you know, she was offered Panto, she did it. It worked. People loved seeing her. She played like the fairy godmother, all glam and all that. So about this time, she would just have been looking to make a living.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sort of rebuilding her life and all that sort of thing.
So it's about a year before she was Miss Goodnight. In...
Yes.
So I don't like the way this is shot either, with the slow-mo. Mm.
Oh. Or is that the DVD?
Yeah, that is it.
Yeah. Bong.
And Robin Hardy wasn't a very good director, was he? I sat next to him at the theatre once.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a great show done by Greg Hemphill. Hello, Greg. You wanted to come and give us a shout? He did a really nice show called An Invitation to the Wicker Man, I think, which was very funny. It was done in the theatre in Glasgow.
Was it called Time to Keep Your Invitation with the Wicker Man?
It was called, I think, An Invitation to the Wicker Man.
Craig? Yeah?
No. Okay. And I at the end of the play, which was great fun, I realised that Robin Hardy was sitting along the road from us.
And him and, is it Schaffer?
Anthony Schaffer.
Yeah, they didn't like each other, did they?
What the fuck's going on here?
Anthony Schaffer, of course, had just written Sleuth before that.
Yeah.
Which is one of the great films.
It is one of the great films, as is this.
No, I think it is, actually.
It's an interesting film.
I think in terms of its defining a certain genre and creating, you know, a certain atmosphere and all that sort of thing, I think it's more important than I think you're giving it credit for.
I'll give it credit for something, which is that it's very different from anything else, which I like.
But that doesn't necessarily mean, films of that sort don't necessarily have to be tremendously good films.
No,
they just have to be important films.
But he's also quite an interesting central character, I think, because he's not massively likable.
No,
not at all.
But he is quite sympathetic. Mm. Because I think you do believe that he is trying to do
sympathetic
what he thinks is for the best.
Well, they've killed a child.
Yeah, because he's there to try and find a missing child. So his motives you can be sympathetic or empathetic with. You don't actually have to like the character.
No. They're a much more attractive bunch than him.
Yeah, but this is the shots of him here in his church. That's the only thing you see off the island, am I right?
Yeah.
In the whole film.
But they do that whole thing with a fucking witcher.
Yeah.
Because, you know, certainly in the 70s, your automatic sympathies are going to be with the free-loving, free-wheeling, enjoying life, and not the fuddy-duddy, dowdy copper from the mainland. Until it turns out, of course, they're a bunch of fucking murdering nutters. Yeah.
Plus, it has a nice feel for his sort of strong Scottish Presbyterianism.
Yeah.
He's a
nice
bit
pajamas,
of a wee free. Nice pajamas,
quite formal. Semi-formal pajamas, I would say.
You know, I've got
an
obsession.
Bed as well.
We always talk about things like this, about little things that you always watch in films. And like, I was interested in beds in films and what people wear. And I was watching that programme, The Crown, the other night. We were talking about it before we came in. And I have to say that George VI appeared to have a nice death. Nice pair of jammies, lovely big bed at Sandringham. You think that's a good way to go. But now we've got to talk about Britt Eklund's nakedness. There she is.
And Willow's song, I think, is fantastic.
It's terrible.
I love it. Why? What's wrong with it?
Well, as you say, it's badly overdubbed.
The song is brilliant.
I do have a problem with badly overdubbing. I don't have a problem with really any of the songs in it, I have to say.
I think the music in this film is fantastic.
Hello there, I'm a Swedish woman. Come into my bedroom and play with my sauna.
But it does bother me when songs are really obviously overdubbed.
Yeah.
He's very good there. In the sequence.
It's something the dread Mark Kermode says, and we don't like him. But he makes the point that if someone sings in a film, it is really bad when it's overdubbed by a different voice.
Yeah.
And we'd rather have an actor, like for instance in Walk the Line, where he's not a massively great singer, but at least he sings it in the film, so it's in his voice.
Well, yeah, and I think that it's a
good film, that, actually. It's quite a good film.
Walk the Line's okay. I think it's a bit... I like Johnny Cash a lot.
I like Johnny Cash a lot.
But I think... I think it's too nice to him.
Aye, yeah.
And I think it would be fairer to Johnny Cash if it was actually more like what he actually was.
Well, because he made no secret of how bad he was.
That's
exactly
the point.
Yeah,
because then it doesn't go on long enough.
Yeah.
Till he became one of the great men.
Yeah, absolutely. And his redemption, and when he got cleaned up.
Yeah.
And,
and me Columbo. Yeah.
There we go.
Body double.
Beave.
See, when she's looking down the camera, it's just weird. I mean, I know you're not sort of paying a lot of attention to She was a bonny-looking woman, it has to be said. That's a lovely cupboard she's hanging there.
I'm just right. entranced by that candle stick. Nope. Yeah, there's a
finished cardboard box.
There's a temptation coming there, I think. Star of the Butter. There's a very unfortunate bit in what's otherwise a great film, which is What's Love Got to Do with It?
I've never seen it.
Great film.
Oh, look, he's got the he's got the horn now. He's like, yeah, oh,
he like, we'll fucking walk like Groucho Marx.
Yeah.
What's Love to Do with It is a great film. Everybody in it is great. Angela Bassett's great. Lawrence Fishburne's particularly brilliant. It's a bit unfair to Ike Turner.
Oh.
Well, because Tina Turner was a Raj as well.
Hmm.
And yeah, he did beat her up. And I'm not, you know, no man is right and all that. That's fine. But she knocked six bells of shite out of him at times as well. Because that's the relationship they had.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the point Tina Turner would often make. Anyway, that doesn't matter. Because it is a genuinely good film. The problem is that when you get right to the end, and she does the same thing, she, you know, she sings well,
mm-hmm.
they don't overdub it, you know, she gets the way she talks and the way she acts, and she sings.
Goodbye, Ragnar Man.
Yeah, she's like, goodbye, soldier. And she does all that, and it's really good. The problem is that right at the last second, when they're singing Love, What's Love Got to Do with It, it then cuts to Tina Turner. You think, well, that's not fair.
Yeah. I don't like that sort of thing. It's weird, isn't it? It can really take you out of a film that... I've only ever seen it once, but I hated the ending of Schindler's List for that.
Yeah.
When at
yeah.
the end the actors walk on with the people they've played. And to the grave. Remember the,
he's actually stuck to the
it's like
there.
He's sitting remember, there, it's like a fucking rat's been gnawing at it.
Remember in Schindler's List, the little girl with the red coat?
Oh, that can yeah. fuck off as well.
So I remember going to see that with my friend Richard, and I said to him at the end, what did you think about the bit with the girl with the red coat?
Mm.
And he went, what?
Mm.
What
really? Okay. I never
noticed
it.
You didn't notice it?
No, we're colourblind.
Well, that's fair enough, yeah, then. That's fair enough.
But the
I just thought, don't look now. Which callback, when it was released in Britain, was on a double bill with...
Wicker Man?
The Wicker Man.
Boom.
Nice.
I win that there. That's me. That was impressive.
And that's why this is such a great film.
Now,
Harsh T-shirt is the opening title. So a shirt there. Of Finders Keepers.
The controversially,
that would be called the Jew's harp.
What do they call them now? If
the mouth harp.
So if I want to buy one of those from Amazon.
Oh, here we go, Walter Carr singing.
Oh, I know.
A truly fucking awful song.
A tree, oh, I like this
and
song.
A fine tree was he.
I like this song.
I just don't like the songs.
Why don't you like the songs?
Right.
I'm saying. I think
what is wrong with the songs?
We can come back and forward on this for the whole film. But
would
I just,
it help if we sang them for you?
No, it wouldn't. That's a fucking big recorder that boy's got in the background there. That's a bass recorder. That
yeah.
he might be totally.
That's not a desk. It could be. Or very far away.
He might just be 2 foot tall.
He could. He's a wee leprechaun.
I'm the leprechaun.
Do you feel that? Sorry, go on.
Controversially, I was going to say, from what you said, I don't like Schindler's List.
No, I'm not breaking on Schindler's List.
I think it's
no,
an exploitation film.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's there are a lot of films that are a lot better at telling that story.
Mm-hmm.
And Spielberg's very good at pressing the buttons.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not sure it tells you anything.
No.
You know,
I remember seeing it, and the bit when Eamon Gert is executed and he's kicked off the chair and it's deliberately grubby
and
horrible, but the person in front of me in the cinema burst into applause. Really? And I thought, well, if you're reacting like that to this film,
that's the wrong reaction.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And the there's the bit at the end where Liam Neeson finally breaks down and he's saying, I could have this badge would have saved two Jews, and they're all hugging him going all that way. Really
saying that was enough. Two was plenty, it's fine.
There's just a lot of... I know, it's a great story, Schindler's Ark.
Sure, yeah, it's a good book, actually.
But, and I know there's no equivalency, it shouldn't be a matter of equivalency, but there are a lot of better stories about people who risked a lot more.
Yeah, I quite liked The Pianist, actually. Have you seen that?
Yeah, the Pianist is with your collaborator. With my collaborator.
Adrian Brody.
Adrian
because
Brody.
What that does really
Adrian
well.
Brody. Adrian Brody.
Adrian Brody.
Adrian Brody.
It's like that list. That would be good, wouldn't it? Maybe they could remake The Wicker Man with Adrian Brody, couldn't they?
That would be great.
Adrian Brody.
Adrian Brody. Adrian Brody. Carry on. Talk about the Holocaust.
Yeah, the Pianist. One of the things that it does really well is it shows you the effect on a family.
Yeah.
So you see them from being prosperous and doing really well sure. to getting worse and worse and worse as the film goes on. And also it's got the parents are played by Frank Finlay and Maureen Lipman. You win.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, things like I find
is Ingrid.
For things that are sort of chilling and all.
It's Diagento.
The things that are sort of.
Chilling, like Schindler's List.
No, the thing that's. Things like conspiracy are more chilling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's so businesslike and straightforward.
That's my favourite of the Nazi films.
But yeah, I mean, I just find Schindler's List. It's an exploitation film. It's designed to push your buttons to make you great.
Well, I remember when he was filming it, he said he was editing Jurassic Park in the evening.
Oh.
And you think being able to do that, there's something slightly disturbing about that. Anyway.
Back to this film. So you were criticising the songs. Do you feel that they serve a function in the film?
No, I don't. That's why I don't like them.
See, I think they do. I think it's integral.
I agree with that. I think it's...
Why?
Because it's all part of the sort of pagan rituals and the weirdness of it.
Yeah.
I think it's meant to
and
sort
the fact
of
they do stuff together.
It starts to introduce this idea that there's something everybody's in on that's no right.
Yeah.
It's also it's Walter Carr. I did our friend we know him well, Alan Brown, who wrote a very good book on The Wicker Man, which he's obsessed with.
Yeah,
this stuff's quite creepy.
And Alan's a great guy.
I have it in the bag over there.
I remember when it got reproduced again for the sort of second edition, I was at an event hosted by my good lady wife at Waterstones Books, and Tori Roper was there with her, and I can't remember the actress. It might have been Barbara. What's her name?
Barbara Raffer.
Yeah, who's in it as
Knox?
Well. No. And Tori Roper.
Barbara Knox.
It's very funny about it, because he's in it. You see him in it.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, and Alan goes into great detail and brings it apart textually and why it's important and all this. Mm-hmm. And Tony just keeps saying, I just don't get why you say this about it. It was just a lot of shite. And none of us knew what the hell we were doing when we were making it. Which is kind of Tony Roper's shtick, but it did make me laugh anyway. That's a lovely bookcase, by the way.
But what I like about this scene particularly is how angry he gets with the children. But how this is when it starts, I think, to build.
Yeah.
When this,
she's 40. The one
I know, under 38. Yeah. Is that the weird shit, like the sort of quite, it's like cruel things, like tying up the people and all that, is just fine, and then just the teacher just stand talking about cocks, and it's his outrage, and that's I think that's what starts to make you shift
Don't
a little.
Feel little liars.
Yeah, it's just you just start you think, you know, you're like. But he's so sort of stuffed shut, but he's right. And they're actually now quite creepy, you know. And I know that.
Diane Cilento, of course, the former wife of Sean Connery. Mother of Jason Connery.
The Hooden one.
Wow. In the top three best Robin Sherwoods. That's Jason Connery, I'd say.
She was a very, very attractive woman.
What was it that you, was it your dad, your mum that used to, who was it that
no,
used
it
to get it
my friend's sister.
Your friend's sister used
Robin,
to.
Robin, da 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 da, the hoodie bar.
The hoodie bar?
The hoodie bar.
I know.
Have you never seen a hoodie bar before?
No. I never for years understood what Dolly Parton was singing about in 1995. I couldn't work out what a cup of Van Nitchin was. And I thought it maybe a type of coffee. However, I've got a good story about this.
It's not the best type of coffee, though, is it?
No.
What's that?
King Camilicani.
King Camilicani. My friend's daughter is in P1 at a primary school, and apparently her teacher, he does two great things. One is that he fans himself and says, they all have to do the same thing. If something's good in class, they go, fantastic! Dick. Uh-huh. And his other thing is he's taught them all to sing 9 to 5.
Oh, really?
So there's this little 5-year-old going, stumble out of bed and I tumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of Van Nitchin.
Now, Diane Colenta was Australian.
Was she? Colenta?
Yeah, sure she was either Australian or South African.
She is one of Australian,
the
yeah.
Is it Chilento?
I think it's Chilento.
I thought it was Chilento. Persian Chilento.
I think around this time she became the partner of Anthony Shaffer. I think we lived in Australia for the last 40 or so years. He died a couple of years ago.
Is she still alive?
I think she is, but she may have died.
She may well have died.
So she's either one
so
or the
she's
other.
She's not alive.
She's dead.
Actually, no, but then again, that means for us, for the purposes of the length of this one, She's in a state of quantum flux.
She's in a state of dead. Possibly in a state of temporal grace.
Yeah, she's sure than just Chilento.
I once at the hospital interviewed as a patient, an inpatient, was a woman who had written a book. She lives in Wales. She's a great old dear. She wrote a book about being an air stewardess when there were proper air stewardesses right back in the 50s. Yeah. She got out of the business when package tours came in.
I don't know what you were going to say there.
In the 60s, because she, you know, they were proper. And she worked for really what are now really obscure fucking airline. Mm. So there was this airline. It was called like Hunter McLennan or something. And they were a haulage firm, hauliers, but they bought a couple of planes.
Oh, brilliant!
And they flew a route. And this is in the 50s that went. This matters. From Scotland through and down to the South Africa.
Oh, yeah.
But you had to stop like every few thousand miles for the night and whatever. Sean Connery was on one flight because a film crew, the whole crew had hired the flight, chartered the flight.
Shag for Sharage.
What the fuck was that?
It's like an Irish Muppet.
That's an excellent Sean Connery impression.
Sean Connery is played by Michael Fassbender.
Connery was a minor player in a film made in Africa. I remember the other day, I can't remember now. Anyway, she was talking to me and she was explaining it all. And she said that Connery proposed to her.
Proposed marriage or something else?
Proposed marriage. Right. And because they'd spent quite a lot of time together, there wasn't very many people on the flight. She was young, very good looking. He's young, very good looking. She still has the menu card with the proposal on it because he was too shy to say it.
Wow.
So he wrote it out and handed it to her. She said no. And I said, why did you say no? First of all, he wasn't that big a star.
No.
He was getting there, done a lot of telly.
I mean, Darby was one of the little people who had been...
Absolutely,
good, but,
one of the great films.
Yeah.
But he'd done
had
a lot of telly.
Had he been in Hell Drivers by that time?
He'd probably been in Hell Drivers, yeah. But he obviously hadn't made Dr. No yet. But what was interesting, and there's a reason I bring this up, is because she said there were two reasons why she didn't marry him. One was he had a bit of a problem with his personal freshness.
Oh, really?
Oh, interesting.
Was he a bit grubby?
A bit grubby and a bit honky.
Yeah.
And
well, he was from Fountainbridge.
Mm. Yeah. But the other point she made was London society, like swinging London society. It's quite a small world then, and being an air stewardess, you know, they went to a lot of parties and knew everybody. And she said, at the time, he was engaged to Diane Chilento.
Right, and she knew that.
No, and she said, and everybody knew that the one person in London you didn't mess with was Diane Chilento.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Big scary Australian bird.
Wow.
Come here, you bitch!
Slap. Who fought for Slash. What was hers?
Ah,
she said, I said, did you ever regret it? She said, I never regretted it for a
moment. Good for her.
She's a great old dear.
Here's Ingrid.
There's Ingrid, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Ingrid's pit.
A fair amount of my life has been spent thinking about Ingrid.
You'd have been the size of Roger if it hadn't been for
Ingrid.
Lovely. Ingrid Pitt.
Remember when she used to go to the Collector Mania shows?
I think she still does. She's
She's not in a state of temporal grace.
I think her last couple of years, she was quite badly ill. Bless her.
Yeah, no, she
she was always there. Yeah.
And much, much loved, and apparently always very great fun. Gosh, great hair. Definitely the forerunner of Helga from Alo Alo.
Yeah, and Princess Leia.
Yeah.
She was in a couple of Doctor Who stories.
Mm. Yeah. Quite sarcastic looking there, isn't she?
Mm. Going, oh my God!
So when they made the Wicker Man,
see now if this was a copper, he'd be dressed like a fucking paramilitary.
Yeah. I know, yeah, I
with stamp-proof vests and fucking
bits
sticks
hanging off from,
bits hanging off from the cops.
That's
how
a copper should dress.
He's a proper small man.
Yep.
So when they made the Wicker Man, who was the audience that they were making it for? What was the intended market? Do we know?
I suppose that
people made films that way in those days.
No, but you know,
just made a film and got it out there.
Well, yes and no, but surely they must have thought, well, people go to see a lot of these films, so we'll make one of these films.
No, it was the arse.
But it must have been the
arse
end of the whole Gothic Hammer stuff.
So you were starting to, I mean, remember, it's the year
before we got into the confessions.
People often say
films.
This, you know, that this is a sort of film that came out the same year as The Exorcist, as though we're supposed to find this in some way hokey. Let me be clear. Problems, though, I have with The Wicker
this
Man.
Is a better
this
film
is
than
a
The
much
Exorcist.
Better film than The Exorcist. As I say, I don't dislike it. I just don't like the songs.
I've been watching the TV series of The Exorcist.
Is that any good?
Yeah, it's all right, actually. It's not great, but it's good fun. You know, it keeps you... Keeps you interested
this
in the story.
This creepy as fuck.
Sorry. Yeah, no, absolutely.
This is like my front room.
Yeah, you do have a freaky house.
Freaky house.
Does that man stay in your front room?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Is he not one of the things you've got stuffed?
Pretty much.
Peeking out of the doll's house.
Yeah,
the haunted doll's house.
Haunted doll's house. Yeah, off Pat Ferrick.
The fat, the pat, the hat, I don't know.
Damn it, what colour was the doll's house?
So creepy. Kids did look very creepy, particularly in the years 1972 to 1974.
Is that something you've looked into?
Yeah.
So to speak.
I studied.
Now, of course, the famous thing here was that they had to stick the blossom on the trees because it was too bloody cold. Uh-huh. It was still early in the spring, so they had to bring all this with them.
Now, I don't remember, because it's so long since I've seen this. Who reports her missing?
I'm not sure if it's...
Someone's written an anonymous letter.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right.
That's my auntie Pat there. That's Honey G.
There you go.
Well, here we go.
Beef. One, two.
Yeah.
Doing the Macarena there.
Your horns off my man.
Some more.
It's a big pair of pants she's got on under there.
And the legend of the Wicker Man, the film, is that it sort of kind of sank without a trace and then was rediscovered. Is that?
Yeah.
Is that accurate though, Craig, as a man who knows a lot about horror films?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I saw it on telly when I was maybe about 10, 11.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was much later than that.
I remember speaking to said Alan Brown about this 20 years ago at a party. Because his then partner worked at the hospital, and we had a long chat about it. He was wanting to write this book about it, and you know, you
the
get
morbid
into,
ingenuities.
You get
is
into
that
the
what it's
yeah, something like that. Yeah. You get into seeing that's Clean Castle.
That's Clean Castle, isn't it?
You get into seeing things like you know, I remember seeing that. I remember Britt Eklund, blah blah blah. Everyone remembers that sort of stuff.
So when's it? Is this 74?
73.
Did Jimmy Logan live in Clean Castle then?
I think he did.
Yeah,
it's Michael Palin.
They used to have private apartments, one of which was Jimmy Logan lived there.
Wow.
Another apartment, we're a bit late now, but was gifted to General Eisenhower.
That's right.
Really? Mm-hmm.
You can hire it to stay at the Eisenhower Suite.
It is beautiful, Colleen Castle.
Yeah, it is.
No, I've never been to it.
It's really beautiful.
But I like Ike.
I think the first time I watched The Wicker Man I was aware of it. It's legend. It was actually quite... I think it was from the 1990s.
I think I didn't see it till then. Yeah. It might have been the same show.
When it was starting to pick up kind of a lot of buzz around it.
Yeah.
I think it was largely because... I think it was... That's how they're keeping that fire going.
Yeah.
I think it was because it's just not the sort of film I watch very much.
There's your man.
That is quite a bar, isn't it? You know, I had no idea until after he died that Christopher Lee... wore a fairly poor hairpiece. When you see photographs of it close up, that he wasn't very good at hiding the mask.
It's just a bit like Frankie Howard's.
Yeah, but I'd never been aware of it until then.
You know,
an extraordinary one.
You know the great thing about Christopher Lee, one of the many great things about Christopher Lee, is that he died, right, fair dues.
Came back.
Right, no.
He was in the grave.
Yeah. Then all the stuff about all the incredible things he'd done in his life had come out.
Yes,
it was amazing.
That's right. Yes.
And then it turns out most of it was bollocks.
Oh, was it?
Quite a lot of it was bollocks. And that actually just makes him seem even better.
What were some of the things that they were said about
him? It was like, he witnessed the last public, the last execution in France. Yeah. Shit! But it doesn't matter.
It's in his...
Because you can believe it.
He wrote two versions of his autobiography. He was a terrible blowhard. He would tell you, as you say, you know, he would say, well, of course, when I went to be interviewed for Eton, I was interviewed by no less than the provost, M.R. James himself, and all this sort of stuff, you know, and it was always for
that. It's all cobblers.
Aye, absolutely. I think he was in intelligence during the war.
That's true. A fact,
But what was great about him is that he wrote two versions of his autobiography, both of which are great titles. The second one was called Lord of Misrule, which is a wee working with the first one.
Yep.
But the first one goes under the great name of Tall, Dark and Gruesome.
Yay!
He loved this film, didn't he?
He did. He was quite the best thing he did. He'd also say, it was written for me, you know, by Anthony Sharper. This and playing Jinnah, which is a bit more... I am Jinnah.
That's a fucking dull film. Man.
But he loved it.
Yeah, but I think because he thought it was worthy. He had a terrible opinion of a lot of his films.
Yeah.
Like when he plays the fucking Matt Barkin one where he's Judge Jeffries.
Oh, gosh.
There's people getting fucked and shagged all over the place. And it's just a daft, fun romp. But he would sort of distance himself from it. I didn't really realise when I was making it that with the boys. You took the fucking money, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you were in the room
when
they were being lashed and fucked.
Yeah.
You know?
He had a terrible habit of doing that. But a lot of these guys, I think we talked about this before, didn't we? With Richard Todd saying that about turning up in...
Things like Asylum.
Vault of Horror.
Aye.
Did we do a...
Richard Todd's not in Vault of
Horror.
It's Asylum. No, it's not Asylum. It's the one... it doesn't matter.
The one that...
It's like one of the very last ones.
When he gets all cut up and whatnot.
Aye.
He's in that, and he's also in one of Pete Walker's films. And in Matthew Sweet's excellent book, Hollywood Babylon, Chips and Babylon, he talks about how he was really sort of embarrassed by them, but he needed the money because his farm's doing badly and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah.
And he'd never be embarrassed by this stuff.
Well, but you know what's great? Is that Peter Cushing was never embarrassed.
He loved them.
And there's a great moment in one of his interviews on Wogan, where Wogan says to him, of course, Christopher Lee will always say, I didn't really make many of it. And he does the sort of voice, and Peter Cushing's pissing himself, and he goes, oh, dear Chris.
Yeah.
He'd be embarrassed.
No. And you see that, and there's a clip from him when he was making them, saying, you know, he seems to give a great deal of pleasure to many people.
Yeah, he did.
Peter Cushing is, you know,
one of the greatest men of the 20th century.
Yeah.
He used a lot of fiddling with props, Peter Cushing, don't you think, in his performance? It has been said.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the important thing there is that I've never noticed.
Yeah.
Very difficult to act with props.
Mm. When I had chance to meet...
Certainly when I was
radio,
in the National Theatre.
Through the radio, when I got to meet...
the hospital.
The hospital radio, I got to meet Brian Cox, and I was having a chat with him before we did this.
Which of Brian Cox?
Brian
Cox, the proper one.
Okay.
And I said to him that I'd just been watching again for the umpteenth time The Silent Scream, the film... from Hammer House of Horror, the TV series that he's in with Peter Cushing.
Oh, yeah.
And I said he was my favourite actor, and I asked him what he was like to work with, and he was charming about him. He loved him.
Really?
He said everything he heard about him was true. He said he was a complete gentleman. And the thing about the gloves, so he didn't get any nicotine in his fingers.
Mm-hmm.
He always smoked with gloves.
What a guy.
Someone suggested to me recently, I thought it was a very good suggestion, that if you were to have someone play Lee and Peter Cushing in a film, Richard O'Brien.
Mm-hmm.
He has the cheekbones for it.
Yeah,
it's true.
Mm-hmm. They should have gone. Maybe
he's from
Baltimore. Maybe they've gone for Rogue One.
Oh, that would be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah,
because we don't know what's going to happen.
No,
when's Peter Cushing going to turn up in Rogue One?
The missing Alan, who did the Superman 3 commentary with us, cleverly put on Twitter today that now the year has gone so horribly bad that he now is convinced that Rogue One's going to be shit, and that'll end the year off.
That's a right stinker.
I think in the back of the tank in the trailer is Nigel Farage.
So here we go. So he's explaining to him how Summer Isle came to have lots of lovely vegetation and palm trees.
Mind you, when I lived in Millport, there were palm trees.
Yeah.
That's not so clever. Mm-hmm.
Corn dollies.
Cut to black.
Let's get fucking
What's the man's
the
name
beach?
There again? He's in Life Force.
Aubrey Smith.
Aubrey Smith.
Aubrey Smith. There we are. Yeah,
life.
He's,
like,
he's
force.
Quite. He is creepy in this.
Mm. Aubrey Smith, I think, was always quite creepy.
Yeah.
Especially in Whodunit.
He's got a creepy face. Yeah, he is. Yeah. He does have a creepy face.
He's got Freddie Jones' eyes.
Yeah. He does have Freddie Jones' eyes.
Working on their own independently.
Yeah. So we mentioned earlier on about the Wicker Man sort of slightly disappeared. So what was... how come it was re-evaluated then? What was the...
Me, you're asking?
Reason? I'm asking the
part of Alan's book, I think.
All right,
yeah, I mean, I think it had always... this is actually quite hilarious, seeing when he's sitting playing the piano.
Yeah, dressed like Nicholas Fairbairn.
Yeah.
He is, isn't he?
Yeah. He actually, he's dressed like Ronnie Corbett in a Two Ronnie sketch about the Highlands.
Delight.
Oh, it's my tea!
Here.
He's not happy about that. Yeah. I can see that hair.
I can see your hair. Not that hair. The
hair down there.
That's a lovely bit of brocadery behind her there.
It certainly is.
How did it get re-evaluated? I think it always had a high reputation among... I still maintain that it's the sort of film that people who don't really know an awful lot about horror say is the greatest horror film ever made and all that sort of thing.
You've dropped that line once or twice before.
I suggest it is the greatest horror film ever made. Yeah,
but then again, you're not a real horror fan.
But the I think it probably must have grown up.
Because of being missing to some extent as well.
Well, I was going to say actually because of... that it grew up around the period that sort of coincided... I'm not suggesting it's the same thing, but... the same type of thing, but around the nostalgia boom in the mid to late 90s. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of looking back for things that people could... and
was
I say
it the
this
right
is one
kind
of them.
Nostalgia?
This is the right kind of nostalgia.
Yeah, this is the right kind of nostalgia.
Yeah.
But I'd say in the sense of people finding things and talking about them to seem clever.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what TV,
and liking things
ironically. What TV cream is. Well, a lot of people would do it ironically.
Yeah,
that was always the downside. That's the wrong kind
of nostalgia.
Anything can be the right kind of nostalgia if it's, I would contend, if it's done without irony.
Yeah.
Yes.
But you can characterise all of the wrong kind of nostalgia in the two-word phrase, in the two-word sentence, remember Bagpuss.
Yeah. How about this phrase coming up now? Oh, remember Spangles?
Well, it's the same as Remember
Bagpuss, I thought that would fall into this. Especially old English ones. What were they about?
Mm. What were they on?
Oh, yeah, and any clip show where they show a clip of children's television from the 70s or 80s to say, oh, they must have been on drugs.
Yeah.
Or had an imagination.
Yes. Or space hoppers. Mark Kermode, of course, a lot about this. He wrote about it. He did documentaries about it and that sort of thing.
I suggest that fits exactly into the category I've just described of people finding things to pretend they're clever.
Yeah.
With irony.
Man's a fool.
The remake.
My son does want to watch it with me. He thinks it must be fun. It's on Netflix.
Mm-hmm. It's not fun.
Is it wrong?
Have you seen the remake?
I've seen the best bad. Of bits with it, with Nicolas Cage going, step away from the bike!
What, beating somebody, smacking a woman in the face dressed as a bear?
Aye, yeah.
But I mean, it's the, you know, there's the fight with the woman who's the Lord Summerell equivalent, where he just walks up and smacks her in the face.
And
nice.
And there's a bit that's cogent to the plot that we understand that he's hurt his leg.
Uh-huh.
So he hurts his leg, and then there's a bit later on where he has to run through a field with his bad leg. And while he's running, he says, ah, my leg!
Of course, I think that punching the women and whatnot is much to do with the dreadful Neil LaBute, who wrote and directed it, whose career completely baffles me.
Mm.
He's basically a woman-hating Mormon from
but remember,
Utah who
remember
got
those,
to write stage plays and
well,
films
I was going to
that
say,
were just
those,
horrible.
These plays that used to always crop up at the fucking the Donmar warehouse and all that's Hollywood stars would come and appear in. Brilliantly lampooned. In Gimme Gimme Gimme.
Oh yes, yeah.
Where Tom Cruise comes to appear in the what was it, the My Life as a Salmon or something. And Tom has to play a passing person. You, passing person, have you anything to say on the matter? And Linda's off stage, and he can't remember his line. He says, what's my line? She says, no. Give me my line. No. Give me my line. No. That's a great episode. Two-hander all the way through. I'm the custard lady.
We were talking about the remake there, but wasn't there also a kind of sequel a few years ago?
Yeah, I was
something tree.
It.
What was that called?
The Wicker Man 2.
No, what was it?
Rise of the Robots.
The Wicker Tree. The something tree.
And, was the it singing, was ringing? It Robin
Hardy for a while, it was. For a while, it was going to be called The Riding of the Laddie.
Oh, right. I think I've seen that.
And then they changed it to. I think it's The Wicker Tree, isn't it?
I haven't seen that film.
No, no one has.
Why has no one seen it?
Because it wasn't. It was made and sort of farted out and kind of been two cinema showings and then turned up on DVD in Australia. 14 times reviewed it, and that was it.
Today,
I would imagine so.
Who do you think would have done the TV review if it was in 14 times?
Well, I don't know, but I wonder if it might have been. Hello, this is Father Lionel Fanthorpe from 14 times.
If it had a big budget. And there may be an English Hollywood actor in it. What do you think he would have said about it?
He'd have said, this is a marvellous film, and I made it, and I've got myself a bout out of it.
If it was on a mid-90s daytime quiz, in which the purpose is to draw things and then try and guess what they are, and on a Wednesday the host would often wear a waistcoat, what do you think they'd have said about it?
This is a really marvellous programme. marvellous programme.
Oh, but the Rolling Stones on it.
Dear. Got through all those.
Well, we've rattled our way through that repertoire. Yeah,
speaking of rattling your way through it, Edward Woodward, very comely fellow.
He was a good-looking man, wasn't he?
Good
looking,
solid.
Yeah.
Solid man.
Yeah. A solid yeoman of England.
That's
what he was.
Oh,
where are you going? For heaven's sake.
Did he understand the film? Do we know? Did he get the film?
Yeah, I think he did quite like it, actually.
Edward Woodward, to be fair, could be a bit... I don't want to say precious, but defensive about his films. Right. In the way that Christopher Lee wasn't. Hmm. So, which I think is actually...
I thought we just said that he was quite defensive.
The way...
No, he would defend the film.
He would defend the film. So, you know, like... Or he would be defensive of his involvement in the film. Whereas, you know, Christopher Lee would say...
I
don't even remember making that film. But, yeah, Edward Woodward would defend his involvement and the films that he was in, which I think is perfectly creditable.
Those... animal masks are creepy, aren't they?
Yeah, they are creepy.
The way they start standing up is good, yeah.
They're like creepy, now is when creepy flumps.
The film really sort of kicks in to be quite exciting now. And just the weirdness of how the guy ignores them here.
Yeah.
They're all going, ah, ha, ha, we too far. Yeah,
you're going nowhere.
Yeah, that's me, I'm off.
Come back for me, you cunt.
All right, then.
Did Strathclyde Police have many... It probably was Strathclyde Police as well.
Aye, absolutely, yeah.
Strathclyde Police, whose area reached into Nova Scotia and upper New York, I think.
Oh, Rock Hall Division.
So what was the deal?
There's been a murder in Hell's Kitchen. Phone Strathclyde Police.
Hello, son.
It's us here now, son. Get yourselves to fuck. Sit your smoking, bat up.
So what was the deal with like the prints and bits of film getting...
Yeah, they were supposed to be sort of stuck in a landfill or somewhere, isn't there? There's all sorts of stories like that.
See, this is the stuff I start to find creepy.
Yeah,
this is what I was saying. It does kick in that from now on. It becomes actually more interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't know what he's up to.
He's under there.
Also, it doesn't all cut together really well, but that kind of helps it. It's really kind of discombobulating.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's like a visual non sequitur.
Oh, that's me. Look, it was speeded up there.
Yeah, it was speeded up there.
I'm your boss. Yes.
And so there was... I'm your boss. I haven't heard that in a while.
Ho ho, I'm your boss. Strathclyde Transport fans. Travel Strathclyde Transport.
So there's
it's the easiest way. No, it's not.
I'll tell you what, it also shows you the one thing I've thing I've always believed. We're quite far into this now, aren't
we? Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
is that one thing that Scotland really lags behind England is that Scottish villages mostly look fucking horrible.
They do, yeah.
Scottish villages,
do look great.
I think Scottish villages look amazing.
No, I'm with Craig on that.
They don't have village greens with pubs on them.
No, I don't.
Old maidens cycling through morning mist.
I don't agree with that at all.
It's a long cycle.
I don't agree with that one tittle.
Do you agree with it or not? Fuck if you agree with it.
Not one jot.
It doesn't matter to me in the slightest. That's a very... It looks like he's one of the spinners.
He does, doesn't he?
In your Liverpool home.
And if you want a cathedral, we've got one to spare.
He's standing there explaining them how to give blood.
Yes, that's it.
Now, what you do is you just go over here.
Spinner song?
The black ones are in the back.
Why is it when you sing a spinner song, you do it in a West Country accent? When
They're all from Liverpool. Yeah. I just always remember that Give Blood advert on the ferry across the Mersey.
The
12 Days of Christmas.
We had a Spinners LP when I was a kid, and there's a song of which the punchline was, and I never got it, but the audience laughed, I'd do it again with me navvy boots on. Apparently that's very funny. Craig?
Maybe in Liverpool. Was there like a spate of navvy boot thefts in Liverpool?
It's not about kicking the black guy. That's what it was.
They just all turned it. They just turned it into spinners.
Look at the pencil sharpeners.
Yeah, the lovely pencil sharpeners, aren't
they? The emu ones, all different colours. Are you actually watching this without your glasses on?
No, I don't usually need my glasses on. Sherbet fountains,
look at that.
Yeah, nice sherbet fountain.
And a nice roll of pencils, some of the best.
The gobstoppers there.
Yeah, like gobstoppers.
Never liked a gobstopper.
No, but I like a
gobstopper.
No, I liked. Do you remember
choking? Putting a big ball up my mouth like that.
Fucking anxious, hard to believe.
Anxious Annie.
Do you remember
Old Holborn?
The watermelon gobstoppers.
Mm.
I like them. Mm. With dinosaur eggs.
Oh, no.
They're creepy, those little kids, aren't they? Those masks. Very creepy.
Both of them combined age.
Fuck off! You just shouted at them.
The other thing that...
You tend to fuck off.
The other thing that is really good about this is that I think the central conceit about what's happening and why they've got them there delivers. You don't sort of think, like, even the fact that, you know, you ask the question, how did you know about the missing girl, anonymous letter, and that gets by you, I think, when they tell you that. It doesn't immediately raise your suspicion.
You're right, yeah.
All of that stuff really works.
Yeah.
Well, it's because I think when you realise, oh my God, no, when you realise what's going on, it's all been leading to that moment.
Yeah. What the script does is it does a good job of not telegraphing it too much.
Hello, Ingrid. Sorry.
Yes. Sorry, I'll leave you to your fingering.
Light fingering.
Badoom!
Yeah, that's creepy, isn't it?
I'll just go back and check that lassie in the bath again.
Johnny Carrick.
Here's the apples.
Don't know.
No, it can't even. It's floating.
It's been there a long time, isn't it?
Have a little top up.
Mm-hmm.
How did he get out of this so quickly?
Don't know. So there's a director's cut as well.
There is indeed. Yeah. And what's on that, Jack?
I can't really remember.
I think this section is a wee bit more.
Is there nudie pictures?
I think this one. Yeah, there might be nudie pictures. And this bit here, it kind of... It's very disjointed the way it's cut together here.
And is there maybe some more shots at the end of the film as well in the director's cut?
I don't know where you're asking me.
The sun...
Me asking?
Rise or set, whichever it is.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hiya, Paul.
You're fucking weird, though.
Bobby Ball.
Bobby Ball!
That's probably what he is. Double leg. Did you? Can you remember when Cannon and Ball went into the jungle, to Celebrity Jungle?
Oh, no.
And they, so they, you know,
never in, watched that program.
Right, in Celebrity Jungle, what they do is they
at
always
his peak was at phenomenally his peak, good.
They what they do is they always hold back one of the celebrities until like a few days in, and this year it was Cannon and Ball, and the mix, I can't remember who they were in with. The mixed celebrities was kind of quite young, and sort of reality TV esque, plus upper middle class, right? So that was commonly. So Cannon and Ball turned up. And they were sort of, their comedic shtick when they turned up was about how they'd been living in the life of luxury. And so they're doing their comedic shtick in front of the cast. And Tommy's going, "Hey, Bobby, what did we have for breakfast this morning?" "Double egg, Tommy. We had double egg." As if everybody there would be thinking, "Oh my goodness, I would kill for a double egg."
I'd point out, though, that some of Bobby Ball's greatest work in recent years has been in Not Going Out.
Oh, he's fantastic.
As Lee Mack's dad.
Oh, yeah, he's in that.
And he has one of the greatest opening lines in any sitcom, where there's a Christmas episode.
Oh, it's a brilliant
where
episode.
Where they're in a haunted country house. They think it's haunted. And Lee Mack and the lass are in there, and there's some noise coming from a cupboard in the hall of this big house. And you almost need to hear it, and Bobby Ball's sitting on the toilet.
Sweet.
And he says, are you on the toilet? And he says, "No, there's I've got a little lizard that lives up my bum. It's just having a drink."
Oh, dear.
Oh, pigging this and pigging that.
I just love Bobby.
Bobby Ball, I'm a sex object. Do you know how that line is? No. That's one of Bobby's one-liners. I want sex and they object.
Yay. That's not very nice. A friend of mine worked with him and loved him. He was great. Really? Yeah, really nice man.
I think he's a great actor.
He's quite reliant on Tommy.
Do you think so?
That's what I'd done.
I think he's a great actor.
No, I mean, in real life.
Is he?
Yeah, this is what I'd heard, that Tommy sort of kind of
organises everything.
Religious, of course.
They had a massive falling out there.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
And then they got back together again.
Yeah, but in the mid-80s, I think Bobby was quite difficult, and they were...
He was a big shagger in that as well.
Yeah, but they were doing that summer season somewhere.
Oh, there's the hand of God!
And at the end of the show, Bobby felt that one of the other artists was being too ostentatious with their bow and trying to hog the line.
All right, okay.
So he waited for the curtain to drop and decked him.
Oh dear. Anyway, it's very funny.
Tell you something about that house. It's got lovely woodwork.
It does have nice woodwork.
And nice furniture as well.
But then most houses in those kind of towns in the coast would have a lot of woodwork in them.
Nah, they'll be plant. Oh, my God.
No, they wouldn't. No. These are places I used to.
Oh, George has been there.
But it's the west coast of Scotland, so the radiator's not going to be on. You can put it on for 1 hour of the night before you go to your bed.
Here's Christopher. Looking like Cher.
It doesn't like Cher.
I've not
seen the sword yet. Yeah, no, he hasn't been in it yet, I don't think.
There's a pal Mark Miller there, look. Waving that sword about. Yeah, Mark. Hey, pal.
Everybody's art teacher. Oh, I find that really creepy.
Yeah, it's creepy. That
all this stuff's brilliant.
Creepy. Real people. I think there's real people there.
But they're not CGI.
You understand what I mean, Craig?
I'm not sure I do.
Yeah, no. I think these guys with their rooms and all that are local.
Yeah, they're real people.
Huffledy, puffledy, ring stone round.
Yeah, there is a bit of that kind of filter, isn't there?
Well, it's that contradistinction of the ordinary and the extraordinary.
Contradistinction? That's a very good word.
Thank you very much. Yeah, in a moment, I'll use contrapunctual.
Oh, will you indeed?
How are you going to manage to crowbar that into the...
I just show? Have.
Yeah. That's what you say when someone asks if they can do a dedication on me, you just did.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Can I say hello to all my friends, my sister, my dad, my mum, my...
Jacobs used to do that all the time. Yeah. You just have, get the fuck.
It's my cock.
Hey, it's my cock.
Do we all hate Cheggers now? I quite like Cheggers.
Do you remember the Viz, the spoof Viz documentary in the?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
With Keith Chegwin and that, and he is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah.
He plays Cheggers down on his luck.
Yeah.
And he's and it cuts to a wide shot and it's him walking on the beach and he goes, "Yeah, you can find a lot of good things down on the beach." and it sort of cuts to him saying, yeah, and then the kids run by and they see me going down to the doll office and I hear them saying, Chigger's gone to guest pop. brilliant.
Aye. Now it's not going to be so fucking clever, Mr. Sergeant. Oh, there you go. There's a proper lens flare.
Mm-hmm.
Not your JJ Abrams one.
No, that's the real thing.
Stonehenge.
Nice pair of gutties he's wearing there.
Yeah. It just becomes the drum beat at this point, doesn't it?
Yes. And this is, yeah, here we go. I think it does help that people in the early 70s did just look creepier than they do now.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go. And so, some of the shots are weird though, aren't they? Because they do look as if they haven't actually, they haven't discussed it particularly.
Mm.
They just like point to the camera.
Because
some of them are out of focus, aren't they?
Right, yeah.
Adds to it though.
But I will,
like that shot.
Yeah, but I think that does add to it. It's a sort of almost like a documentary aspect.
Chop. It's a great costume to come in as well.
So it's very tense, this.
Mm. It is. So what do we know of Anthony Schaefer then, apart from this and Sleuth?
What more do you need to know?
I don't know.
He wrote lots of the... I think he went on to write a lot of the, I think, the sort of Poirots that we talked about with Michael Winner.
Oh.
I think he wrote things like Evil Under the Sun and whatnot, didn't he?
Yep.
Which is kind of odd, really, because Sleuth is a complete mistake of them. Mm-hmm. He's Peter Schaffer's twin brother, of course, but I don't think they got on very well. Mm-hmm. Peter wrote Amadeus and Royal Hunt of the Sun and...
It was a Schaffer.
Everybody
was asleep.
And Anthony had been a barrister, been a criminal barrister.
Okay.
And he wrote, I think Sleuth was his...
Sorry?
Yeah, well, I think that's the thing. I think for Peter wrote all the really highfalutin ones, but I think with Sleuth alone, Anthony fucking, you know...
Yeah, knocked out of the park.
Knocked out of the park in terms
Sleuth's
of playing.
A great script.
And it was a very successful stage play.
Mm-hmm. I saw... Sleuth on stage.
Did you see it with Peter Bowles in it? I thought I thought I remember you saying that, yeah. And of course it inspired a famous line in the Smith song.
Did it?
Yeah. You're nothing but a jumped up pantry boy who never knew his place.
Wow. Have you been a fan of the Smiths?
Oh yeah.
I've noticed. It's not that I've never been a fan of. They just completely passed me by.
No, I was really into them when I was at school, and I still like them. I hate Morrissey. I think he's a knob.
Mm.
I was reading Alan Bennett's new diaries recently, and it turns out he's quite friendly with Morrissey.
Really?
Yeah.
Morrissey's not.
I get the feeling though that
was atrocious, wasn't it? Did he not win a bad sex award or something?
I don't know.
I get the feeling that Morrissey would talk to anybody that day. Yeah. Alan Bennett will talk to anybody that will talk back.
Hello there, Morrissey. What are you?
Hello. Have a digestive biscuit and some cock.
Well, one thing I do notice about him in the new diaries is that he has come to talk an awful lot of shit about politics. You know,
he's got that age.
He attacks private schools but defends that he goes for private medical care.
I know.
He talks about how much he hates the Blairites and whatnot, then says, I met David Miliband in the street and I told him how we all missed him and it was terrible. Come on. You know what I mean? You're not fucking paying attention.
Maintain a narrative line, Alan.
So this is the bit where he thinks he's found Rowan and they go into escape room.
Yep.
Yeah, well.
And now you have the big reveal coming up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way to do it.
Craig.
Hey! I just did that out there. Yeah, well done, son.
Yeah. That was excellent.
Before you make into chips.
It's time to keep your appointment with the Wicker Man, Craig.
Is it, Jack? Mm. Is that time?
Yeah, it's kind of coming up to that bit.
It's time for your appointment with my foot up your arse. It's a nice pair of sannies that Christopher Lee's wearing there.
That's what I said earlier.
Did you? Sorry, mate. Yeah. I missed that.
I like that sort of jeans, gutties, sports jacket, yellow polo. Right.
Wig.
Wig.
And a host of made-up stories.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. That's a life where I lived. Apparently.
Yeah. Lived by somebody else, but lived very well.
Yes, absolutely. Well, the fact that you can live a life such that people might believe that you've done that.
Yeah, exactly.
I choose to believe. Mm. Is this in Contact or something?
Prometheus.
Prometheus, yeah.
Because I chose to believe.
I chose to believe it. Really, Naomi Rapacious, is that a fact?
Oh.
You're meant to be a scientist.
Yeah.
Prometheus.
It's foaming. Did you see that there?
He's got nowhere to go there.
Big ass.
Stop it.
He's pretty good.
Yeah.
That was me.
Glory you are.
Yeah, you've been played for a fool, son.
Yes, come on, just put him in the boards and run away.
Great blinking.
Great eyelid acting. It's maintaining your dignity while wearing that outfit.
Yeah.
No, there's no way off.
England's got ahead of you. Lee is very good in it because he plays him as a bit of a maniac at the end. He realises he's off his fucking chump completely.
I think also it probably worked especially well at the time because it would have seemed more than now so odd that a lord, a local gentry, would have been so irrational.
Yeah.
You know, the time there was still been enough deference around for people to think, well, surely he'd be the one person who would see through it
all that nonsense.
As it transpires, he's the one that's the principal believer.
That's a good point,
Was this quite an untypical role for Christopher Lee at this point, do you think? I always felt that this was very different.
Oh, Christ, he was made about 12 films a year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he had, by this stage, just thrown himself into playing Dracula every 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but it's also the period in which he made Deathline and Horror Express, which are all very interesting films.
I don't think there is a typical Christopher Lee role.
Untypical Christopher Lee hair.
Atypical.
That's because it's somebody else. It may well be somebody else's typical hair.
Typical hair.
That glue was
Do you think that hair belonged to a guy?
That's the salt light. It's the guy pasted onto the thing.
Do you think good that is the hair of, hair of the person who witnessed the last execution in France?
But when may well have been. Certainly looks alarmed.
Guess what time it is now?
It's time for House.
No need for that, you big bastard.
Yeah, check him about it.
Hold on. Get your hands off me.
Hold on.
He's got a stiffy. Get him off me. He's touching me with his bobby. The OP let her down a bit there. Smoker's teeth.
Oh, I'm going to use this costume for the pantomime.
This is the into them, does he?
No, he doesn't. I think this is all the sort of thing that's the sort of messes with you because your sympathy sort of stretched to him, but he's still doing this. You know, I'm a Christian, which is not what an audience in the 70s is want to hear.
No.
Never, I mean, let alone now. But I mean, there would be some fucking brammers who would go along with that. But back then, it'd be like, hey, what man?
You square man. Loot.
It's there's no, loot.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah. There's no Wicker Man festival.
Still what I thought
you
said. Yeah, but it's nothing to do with the film.
They do burn a Wicker Man though.
Yeah.
And it's something. It doesn't kind have of somebody close in it. To where they did it.
I should have mentioned it last week, but there's also Rest as Natives festival.
Is there?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which supposedly.
No.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, supposedly is connected to the film.
Really? Did the two guys turn up?
I mean, I thought so.
I think one of them does, but I'm not sure if they both come along. Uh-huh.
Oh.
Nipples one, two, oh, two. Confirmed.
Doesn't he say? Didn't he say in interviews that he was getting pissed on by all the animals that were
above him
in this scene?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Once.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was absolutely drenched in it.
Yeah. Piss.
Of course, the thing that, the thing I find, just from a personal perspective, because it freaks me out, is the idea that he's there and there's no way out.
No, yeah,
there's nothing that he can do or say that's going to stop them doing
and
it.
There hasn't been any.
It's like it's really happening.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's no if I do this or that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if you recant, we won't do it. They're going to do it.
Yeah.
And there's too many people who get away and nobody's going to save you.
Yeah.
It's like a feeling you get that you revisit. I think this is why it works. You know, like when you're a kid and you've done something and you know you've done it and you've been found out and you're waiting to get done for it and there's no way out and you have that really empty feeling in the pit of your stomach.
This is going to happen.
It's just going to happen.
Going to have to face the music, kid. Yeah. You were a very bad boy, though.
Yeah.
You're a dirty wee boy.
I'm a dirty wee boy.
See, they're just not having it.
Nope.
Yeah. Killing him won't make his apples grow.
I think it's the fact, but that's what's so good about it, is the fact that they look so ordinary.
They've got proper faces.
Yeah, they do have proper faces.
He's a cunt.
Look at his hair.
That's not real.
It looks like one of those ones. You pull a wee thing and they go,
you can actually see the mat at the, the corner of it.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, sweet Jesus Christ. Oh, whatever. Aye, all right. You're going nowhere.
And it's a great performance because his reaction when he sees it is fantastic.
Yeah.
Of course, the thing we have to nod the head to is the closing shot of the film, which is extraordinary and was pure luck.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But it is utterly beautiful.
That must have been cold as fuck being on there.
It really was.
You know, imagine how many days they were filming for.
Yeah, because I mean, a minute ago they were sort of in the gloaming, and now they're not. Oh Jesus!
And there's an awful lot they had to get. I mean, that is just great. That Of course, it's kind of given away by the title of the film.
It is a bit. Yeah.
And also, the poster always had it on.
I suppose it's working out how it's going to happen. Yeah. You know. The other thing is that I think what makes this final reel so successful is when they start doing the totally barking fucking
singing,
arms swinging and
stuff,
and all that. It just seems even creepier and not silly.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's a beautiful. See, none of the shots actually match in terms of continuity, but it doesn't really matter.
No,
it's no worse than a Spielberg film.
No,
absolutely.
I think the blankness of the face is good.
Grey sky.
They look very like what?
Well, that's like a clear blue sky.
Yeah, but I'm saying that the actual Wicker Man itself, its face reminds me of the robots from Pyramids of Mars.
Ah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, aye.
The mummies.
Yeah. Monitors.
Yeah.
Actually, it has always looked like it'd be quite easy to get out of
it. It does, yeah.
But I suppose the thing is, where are you going to go?
I would just like to jump on fat boy's back and just break his neck for a laugh.
Would you not actually just take a fucking skier for it and jump over the cliff?
You're
probably better than burning to death.
There you go.
Sorry. Oh, it's incredible.
That's fair play to him, though. He keeps his faith till the end.
Yeah, singing along. He's
a
martyr.
Shot, isn't it?
You're all going to the bad fire.
So you've got a hairpiece on there as well?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. I think that's his hair.
Yeah, well, we were always quite happy to have no hair when you'd no hair.
Yeah, but they might have put it on for the part. They might not have the option.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Do we like Callan?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I like the film as well.
Oh, the films are great.
Yeah. The one with the war games and whatnot is fantastic.
And the epic Russell Hunter performances.
Mm. Lonely. Mm. Yeah, no, Callan's a great program. The way the hand drops down. I mean, it's a good bit of kindling they've got on there because, you know, it's a fire at home and I'm a bastard to get going at times. That's very impressive, though.
It's in the open air, though.
Good bundles of kindling there.
What's hard on that?
Some nice dry ferns.
There you go. There's a fucking band. Crazy band.
Hey, look at him. Looks like he's really enjoying himself, obviously, isn't he?
And the noises of all the animals. The pigs.
Yeah, the soundtrack becomes very busy at this point, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's a proper sort of climactic moment.
Does it deserve its reputation?
I think it deserves its reputation for the last reel, at least.
Yeah, I think it's amazing film. I think all the way through it's a great film.
Except the songs.
Oh, I love the songs.
This is a song that's good.
The soundtrack album's brilliant.
Is it as good as I'll Find My Way Home by John and Vangelis?
I think it's
not.
Your weird obsession with that song.
I love that song. It's the greatest song ever written.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
It's not the greatest song ever written.
Mrs. Jack write something, do some sort of work on...
On John and Vangelis?
No, on something to do with folk music used in... horror or something.
Oh, I don't know.
I seem to remember that a few years ago.
You should pay more attention to Mrs. Jack.
Well, whenever she comes on here, she just slags me off. So.
She's got a point.
Because you're a halfway fucking clown.
There we are, I see.
Ooh.
Yeah. He's doff of the cap to Mr. Woodward there.
Brilliant performance.
Lord Woodward of the trees.
So presumably at the time when it was released, the sort of critical view of it was not great.
No, it didn't bother anyone very much.
I don't think it really registered.
You know what kind of Derek Malcolm said, down the reverend shocker.
I think though,
whereas Ken Loach has made another programme.
To be fair, it was an era where totally barking films were coming out all the time.
That's true.
I mean, if this was made and released, I don't mean the mental one that they just did recently, or more recently. If this was made and released now, it would be like, fucking hell, what is this?
Yeah.
But then it was just like, this is not as crazy as the last Amicus film.
It actually sees through its concept to the bitter end.
Mm.
And so at that point, he's
and then
dying.
Stops.
Yeah.
When was Straw Dogs?
Here we go. 71, that's a fucking horrible film.
Because that's kind of similar.
But here's the shot over the shoulder is the incredible shot. My view.
Yeah, no, it is.
Yeah, watch this. Yeah.
Oh,
then it just
look at that!
Yeah, brilliant. And
that's just extraordinary.
Yeah,
I don't think.
And he just reframes for the sun.
Yep. Yeah. I don't think Lean or Spielberg got a shot like that.
No, that's
fantastic.
And then that's your film finished.
Yep. Yeah. It's see when the story's done. Stop.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
They'd have to be. I really feel now they would have. They would make some. Fucking follow on.
You
what
see
happened.
Someone arriving later on, you know, new
and they're doing
coming.
It all again.
There would
something.
Be yes, it would either have to be another service,
and they'd reset
anew,
it all,
or maybe they won't get away with it.
And then their apples wouldn't grow.
Lindsay Kemp was Alden McGregor. That was him. Yeah. He was quite a famous actor.
I forgot Juliet Cadzow was in it.
That's the one I was also saying is in Venus.
The great Dave McLennan's wife. Great actress in her own right. I'm not saying
she's naked in Venus Peter as well.
That made it sound like she was only
was the postman.
That made it sound like saying she only mattered in relation to.
No, absolutely.
Tony Roper's role was very.
Rich Lyon.
I think I remember him saying that he actually had trouble riding the bike.
Made in terrible location in Scotland.
What else did British Lyon make?
British Line.
Oh, tons of time
Because they were a sort of British Leyland style amalgamation. Anyway, there you are.
That's the Wicker Man.
So what do you think then, Craig?
L'homme du Wicker.
As I say, it's got a great ending. It is a terrific film in its own way, but I hate the songs.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Bye.